good morning. I bet that woke you up. That was a killer tune called Nobody by an amazing artist named Sate. That song was co-written and produced by Hill Kirkutis, and Hill just happens to be my very special guest today. My name is Stuart McKee, and this is Musicians FAQ. My guest this morning is an award-winning, multi-talented creative musical force. She has collaborated with and written songs for some of the top artists in Canadian music, including Lila Gilday, Royal Wood, Jewels, The Weeknd, Digging Roots, Cassie Da Silva, Sate, Madison, Violet, Pavlo, and Martha and the Muffins, as well as Tanya Joy, July Talk, Adam Cohen, Dear Rouge, Good Lovelies, Jill Barber, Sass Jordan, and Serena Ryder. And that's not even everyone. My guest this week also appreciates what she has and how she got there. She's always looking to pay it back or pay it forward by coaching and mentoring new emerging artists. I am so thrilled to welcome to the show, Hill Kirkutis. So my guest this week on Musicians FAQ is Hill Kirkutis. Hill, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So I always want to go back to the beginning, find out kind of where you're born, what your childhood was like. And so tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I guess I was born in Scarborough, but now they changed my birth certificate or the passport. Now it says Toronto because of the amalgamation of everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was born in Scarborough, but grew up in a hamlet called Greenwood, north of Ajax.
Okay.
And it was a pretty... looking back, idyllic childhood. There was a property that I lived on that was about 5 acres that backed onto a forest. So as a kid, I just remember, you know, dreaming a lot and running around in a forest and collecting like rocks and bones and making up alternate realities.
Wow, nice.
Yeah.
That does sound idyllic. And siblings? And
yeah, I have an older sister and a younger brother, so I'm a middle child. And I grew up, I'm also Greek, so I grew up in a typical Greek household, multiple generations. Like my grandparents lived with us. I had my parents, and then next door, my aunt and uncle, and my grandmother lived there. So yeah, it was a family affair.
Nice.
And my cousins as well, yeah.
And probably lots of great food.
So much food, so much awesome food. That's the center of my universe, aside from music.
Nice. And was there a lot of music growing up? Was it a lot of Greek music or was it more contemporary music?
It was a mix. Like we listened to everything growing up, obviously a lot of Greek music just because it was, we're so connected to our culture. But I also just grew up listening to top 40 radio. I had an older sister that kind of introduced me to a lot of cool music. So I feel like I got a bit of an introduction into some music that wasn't necessarily a part of my generation. You know, it was a couple of years ahead that I started listening to way younger, which was awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. And were you musical right from the start, or was it like just kind of you enjoyed music, but were you going around the house singing and banging pots and pans? Or
yeah, I totally did. It's funny because nobody in my family are official musicians. Like there weren't any instruments necessarily growing up. My grandmother loved to sing, and I would find myself, my sister and I used to love singing, and we used to write songs like while banging on Folgers coffee cans with like those foldable collapsible hairbrushes. Those were like our drumsticks. But yeah, like it's funny because I always kind of knew that I wanted to play music. Like since I could remember, we would go to like weddings and there would be a band on the stage and I would just want to get up there with the band. And like, I've been known to jump up on stage and grab a tambourine at like a Greek function and just start playing along. So yeah, it was like, it was something that I always knew I wanted to do. And so I found myself begging my parents to let me take music lessons. And there was no kind of precursor for that in my family. My sister was a dancer, and so I got put into dance lessons, and I sucked at dancing, and I was just like, I just want to play music. So finally my parents signed me up for guitar lessons at like 7, and then that's when it officially started to grow. But before that it was very informal, but I was always singing or making songs up, I guess.
Nice. And was guitar the instrument that you wanted, or did they pick that for you?
I feel like they wanted me to play piano, which I eventually did do like about a year after I started playing guitar. But the guitar was something that I naturally gravitated towards. Like I always wanted an electric guitar.
Yeah, nice. I had a little plastic guitar, I remember, when I was a kid, and then my brother or somebody sat on it and I was crushed. And then I begged for guitar lessons. And they had, it was with the conservatory, and they had somebody come over with the accordion and do the aptitude test. My friend next door wanted to play guitar too. They said, well, you're well suited for the accordion. And his dad loved that because he was from Newfoundland and he could play all those old folk tunes. So he got stuck with the accordion and I got to play guitar. But I begged my dad for an electric guitar too. And he thought the acoustic guitar would be better. Oh, if you want to bring it around to parties. I thought at the time, maybe he was just being cheap. But I think in retrospect, it was probably a good way to start. But,
my family actually, yeah, my mom started me off on classical guitar. Because I guess that was like, they went to the music school and they were like, oh, what should she start on? So they're like, oh, she should start with classical guitar. But I did, it was my dream to play electric. And actually one of my first summer jobs was working for my family's company. I was filing and answering phones. I was 13. And I worked that summer to save up for like my first guitar. And it was my dream guitar, which was a Fender American Stratocaster. And that year it came out in aquamarine metallic color. And there was one sitting in the glass case at the music store that I pretty much had my eye on. And luckily it was meant to be mine because it didn't get sold and I was able to buy it at the end of the summer.
So, that's awesome. Yeah. Good for you. Yeah, I kind of went on a bit of a guitar binge lately, but I had a Squire when I was younger. I just got my first kind of American Strat and American guitars a few years ago. And COVID hit, and prior to that, I just went crazy and had my midlife crisis. Instead of buying sports cars, I bought guitars.
You know what? I'm obviously biased, but I love buying guitars. I actually have two Squires, and I like them more than some of my American Fenders. So yeah, they're awesome, especially those new Classic Vibe Squires are built to vintage specs, and they sound amazing.
Yeah, well, I've got a Squire Telly and it plays really nicely. And,
I do too. I got one from the 80s that I adore.
Nice. Yeah,
that's one of my main guitars.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, one of the pictures I was just looking at when I was telling you before the show, I was showing my son an old guitar that I had, but my wife left it in the car after picking me up at a gig. She had to run an errand and then it got stolen out of the back seat. But
that's the worst.
I don't know if there's anything lower than stealing somebody's guitar, but... Anyway.
Oh yeah, I actually someone stole my bass after a show a few years ago. Actually now it's probably more like 10 years ago. It's weird how time works. Yeah, it was about 10 years ago now. And I actually like I had a feeling I knew who it was. It was someone pretending to be like a promoter.
Oh wow.
And I just had this knowingness. I was like, I'm going to find my guitar. And so I just started running and I ran out of the venue and all the security people started chasing after me too. And I freaking found the guy in an alleyway. And I got my bass back. Yeah.
No way. Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you. Well, it's funny. You always hear these stories about people like Clapton or somebody that got a guitar stolen back in the 60s or 70s. And then 30 years later, somebody returns it or finds it. It's crazy. But
isn't that what just happened to Randy Bachman with his like, first Gretsch or something?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He just located it in Japan.
You're right. Sorry. Yeah. I just literally saw him talking about that on Instagram a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
It's like information overload these days with so many things coming back at you. So the guitars, you got the electric guitar, started playing. So you were taking classical lessons or is it more of an independent instructor or were you playing by ear and just kind of listening to tunes? And
It was a bit of both. I had a really awesome guitar teacher when I first started named Ray Hickey Jr. And he taught me essentially the fundamentals of guitar and we built upon that for quite a few years. But a lot of it, you know, it's funny because as much as I wanted to play music, I hated taking music lessons. Like I took piano. I did the conservatory stuff with piano. I also did voice, like classical voice. And I never practiced. Like I loathed practicing, but I loved playing. So I hated sight reading. Like I can kind of do it still, but I'm so out of practice with it because it's more of an intuitive thing for me, you know, and I felt like it stifled my creativity. I still feel that way sometimes. It's nice to know, obviously, some theory, but a lot of my approach to music and stuff, it's always been a lot of intuition and ear, picking stuff up by ear, playing it back, or just exploring and finding my way through it, you know.
Right. Yeah, no, that's cool. Well, I mean, Paul McCartney doesn't read or write music. And I know there was an opportunity for him to learn from somebody that he was working with, a classical musician, years ago. And he said, no, he goes, I don't want to mess with things. You know, my system's been working well for me, for, yeah. Which is clearly an understatement. But I think sometimes that happens when you don't have that formal training, you experiment. You look at a lot of the punk and new wave bands and different bands and things over the years. And I think when you don't know things, you get maybe more exploratory, because formally people will tell you, oh, you can't do that, and you know, it doesn't make sense. And I was doing some recording last year too, and the producer was formally trained, and he thought it was weird, you know, the chord that I was ending on a song type of thing. And he goes, but then he kind of went, oh, it's kind of cool actually. And he goes, you know, did you do that intentionally or by accident? I said, it's probably by accident, but you know, that's what it is. You feel your way along, and then mm-hmm. that's neat, and then you go from there. And you play multiple instruments now at this point.
Yeah, I'm kind of self-taught on all the other ones. Like the bass, I figured was going to be easy because it's just like a guitar, but with four strings. So I kind of play bass like a guitar player, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm a very melodic bass player. And I taught myself how to play drums, because then I was like, oh, I want to be able to record everything myself. And pretty much anything that I need to pick up to get through a recording now, like I'm by no means a virtuoso on anything. I like to call myself like a jack of all trades and a master of none, but I can get my way through it. And because for me, it's like, you know, my relationship with as a multi-instrumentalist is really tied into me being a songwriter as well. And ultimately... Right. My approach to playing anything is what helps propel the songwriting forward, right? Like the story. So
sure.
That's more interesting to me.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah. If you need a sound, you just grab an instrument.
Yeah.
I would think as a producer, recording engineer, drums are probably pretty fundamental. It's nice to have that ability to play your own tracks, as opposed to always having to rely on somebody else or program or use synthetic drums.
Yeah. And it's funny, I don't usually record drums. Like I'll usually hire a drummer and go to a space, because especially when I'm working on an album, like I love to be able to listen to things and I'm not like, you know, I'm really picky about drums, and I'm nowhere near as good as the guys that I hire or women that I hire to play. It does help, especially when it comes to programming as a producer, because a lot of the time now, especially now that we've been in COVID times, like I've been programming a lot, and it really helps just to get a realistic way of playing, you know, when you're programming.
Right. Yeah. Text me on my birthday, not to wish me happy birthday, just to tell me about the other girl that you're in love with now. Yeah, I think her name is Megan. Well, I know her name is Megan, cause your mom posted that photo. I'll pretend I just found out. Say you're sorry for the heavy text. Yeah, what the hell did you forget? We haven't talked since back in May, back when your uncle passed away. You wanna make me jealous? Sorry, I'm not overzealous. I'm just blowing out my candles. I can't handle you just trying to pull me back in, back in, back in. Are you trying to pull me back in, back in, back in? It's unsolicited contact. Now you're bringing up the past, like we didn't end the shit 4 years ago. I don't need you, I don't need any of your unsolicited contact. Literally don't want me back. What you doing, what you come here looking for? I don't want you, I don't want any of your unsolicited. I don't understand it, like the universe just planned it. Wonder why my name popped in your head, and why you thought to go ahead and reach out from your Android. Oh, I guess you got an Android, cause my texts are sending green, and holy shit, I'm so relieved that you can't see those little dots that say I'm writing my reply, cause I'm just so, so confused. I don't know what you're trying to do. Are you trying to pull me back in, back in, back in? Are you trying to pull me back in, back in, back in? It's unsolicited contact. Now you're bringing up the past, like we didn't end the shit 4 years ago. I don't need you, I don't need any of your unsolicited contact. Literally don't want me back. What you doing, what you come here looking for? I don't want you, I don't want any of your unsolicited.
Blow my candles, make a wish, yeah. Guess what, I didn't ask for this. Why are you coming back around? Why
you thinking about me now? Blow my candles, put them out. No one for me to worry about. Getting all left in my head. And it's unsolicited. It's unsolicited contact. Now you're bringing up the past. Like we didn't know this shit 4 years ago. I don't need you and I don't need any of your eyes. Don't need any contact. Little later, want me back. What you doing, what you come here looking for? I don't want you, I don't want any of your eyes. Don't want any contact. I don't need you, I don't want that. What you listening to? I don't need, I don't want that. It's unsolicited.
That was a song called Unsolicited Contact, a hit single by Cassie Da Silva, co-written with and produced by Hill Kirkutis.
So when did you first start playing out publicly? Did you have a gig as a guitar player or as a singer? Were you just kind of going out and doing coffee shops and singing your own stuff? Or
I had a band, my first band. So I went to an all-girls school in Whitby, Ontario from about grade 6 to grade 12. So that was like my middle school, high school experience. And I started a band with the girls from my school, and that was kind of our first thing. And so we started playing at functions at the school. There was like coffee houses and arts nights and stuff. And yeah, we were at like a 4-piece and played some pop rock tunes. We were called the Sirens. Actually, Megan Patrick, the country artist, was in my band.
Oh, no kidding.
She was one of the original Sirens. She was the lead singer. I was the guitar player / songwriter. And that was kind of how I started. And then I guess we were 12. And then by the time I was 13, 14, that's when I started playing the clubs downtown.
Right.
So I just kind of started gigging from that age, and it never stopped. And it started off with my projects, and then eventually, you know, at around 16, 17, I started getting asked to play for other artists as well. So I just kind of fell into that by accident.
Very cool. And you've played with some pretty big artists over the years. Was it The Weeknd that you were a singer in his band or a guitar player in?
I play bass and keyboards.
Bass and keyboard. I wasn't even close, but.
Yeah, well, it depends on the gig, right? I'm not really known as doing one thing. So.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, are you one of those people that, you know, somebody's looking for something? Oh, yeah, I play the bass. Or, you know, I mean, you always hear like actors that they're looking for an actor that can ride a horse. Sure, I can do that. Absolutely.
Well, that's just it. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the time that I've done those gigs, like playing for other artists, it's been friends of mine that ask if I want to just come join them on the road for a bit. So I haven't necessarily been that musician for hire that like auditions for artists. But yeah, like I'll get asked to go, and usually I'm the multi-instrumentalist, like I'm filling in a lot of gaps when I'm asked to do that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Nice. That's a good spot to have. And then were you on the road quite a bit, or was it just kind of going out on the road, coming back, kind of doing your own stuff? Or
it was both of that. I mean, there was a good period of about 12 years that I was pretty consistently on the road. Like that was the main thing. And interspersed with that, I'd come home and I'd produce projects or write on projects, or I did also direct music videos for a stint as well, because I'm a film major. So that kind of led me down this path of directing music videos for a while. So I was kind of balancing all that stuff whenever I'd be in town. And then the rest of the time was spent traveling.
Nice. And did you enjoy it out on the road? Did you enjoy the touring or being just playing live or both?
I did. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I have a weird relationship with live shows because I love them. Like once I'm in the moment, I love it. But it's also been the greatest source of anxiety for me. Like I used to throw up before every show.
Oh, no kidding.
For pretty much the first six, seven years that I was gigging. So I'm never super comfortable with it, but I did enjoy it. I did love the experience of touring, 'cause I'd always be on the road with my friends. We'd have adventures. You're in a new place every day. You're getting to know different people and cultures and communities. And I loved that about it. But ultimately, for me, I discovered after doing it, because I was doing it so much, I got to the point where I realized it wasn't like what I wanted to spend the majority of my time doing.
Sure.
Because the reason why I started playing music was for the creating. And I think that's why I always loved the studio so much, you know? Yeah. So I do love touring, and I still find myself going out for one-offs, you know, every so often just for an adventure, just to itch that scratch that I have. But yeah, I kind of have veered away from doing that now.
Yeah. That's neat. Well, and did you find that a lot of that road work and a lot of that session playing impacted you as a songwriter, as a producer, that you kind of brought some of that experience and that energy and tightened you up as a player? And how was that kind of relationship? What did it bring to the studio for you?
Yeah, I mean, all those things, I think. Sorry, my dog's barking in the background. She must have seen a squirrel. Sorry.
Okay, we have a husky golden retriever mix, so go after anything. Okay,
and they're very vocal dogs. I have an Aussie doodle, so she's like a poodle Australian shepherd mix.
Does she actually catch anything and bring them back?
She caught a mouse once, and it was really, but she didn't really grab it. She was just pawing at it with her massive thunder paws. And she's a puppy. She's still kind of learning her way through this world. But yeah, so in regards to the touring and how that relates to my studio work, it absolutely made me a better player. It made me, I think the more that you do something, the more it's going to enrich your life. And I feel like I've done so many different things that are all kind of relevant to my studio work. Like there's, yes, the songwriting, there's the playing with other people as a multi-instrumentalist, even directing music videos. I also ran my own label for a bit and was releasing my own music independently. So I think all of those things kind of inform my job as a producer in the studio.
Right.
Because, you know, yes, part of my work as a producer is to help facilitate the recording of something, but I also really like to relate that to the artist career as a whole and kind of where that trajectory is headed. So all of those things and experiences do help me kind of draw all those things out into the recording.
Very cool. So now with the anxiety that you kind of had with performing live, was singing a hard thing for you as well, or did that just really kind of start at the same time as the music or playing an instrument?
Singing was weird for me because I never felt like a singer. Like I loved singing background vocals, but I was always kind of the background vocalist in my first few projects. And then I kind of became a lead singer out of necessity because I was just doing a new project and I needed someone to sing. So I'm like, I might as well do it. But I actually never liked singing. I never felt connected to my voice until I felt I found my voice. And I found it... I found it by accident. Like I was sitting cooking in the kitchen. I think I was like 17 or 18. And I was singing to some old like 1930s jazz recordings, like Gershwin recordings. And there was something about me singing along to those where I found like, it finally felt like my voice felt like it was mine. Like it felt effortless, which it always felt like I was straining. Like it wasn't comfortable. And then I think once I found that feeling, then I was able to start developing my joy of singing. I realized I wasn't like one of those technical singers, you know, like I'm more of a character singer. So it was a matter of kind of accepting and finding what that was for me.
Yeah, that's an interesting journey. I think a lot of people have come up that way. I mean, I know John Hiatt, heard an interview with him years ago, and he said similar kind of thing. He really didn't get his voice or like his voice. And then, you know, he grew into it. I mean, and partly out of necessity as a songwriter who needed to go out and perform his own songs, and he was trying to make it that way, but other people were singing his songs, and that's where he was having the success. But he wanted to be, you know, performing, recording artists of his own. But it's interesting. I like the character voices. I mean, you know, and there's so many great ones in rock and roll and things. I mean, you know, female and male, and it's an interesting thing, though. I think that's a good way of putting it. Like you're when you find your voice, then suddenly it becomes that much more powerful.
And then I think it really, I do write for songs for other people too, but when it comes to my own songs, like I finally, when I found that voice, it just kind of enhanced the songwriting because there was finally a narrator, like an authentic narrator for those stories. So.
Yeah. It can definitely convey them or sell them a lot more honestly, I guess.
Cause you believe it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's awesome. And on the note of songwriting, do you remember, I mean, were you writing songs? Were you writing lyrics first, melodies, or just did, you know, songs come out at a young age, or was that kind of later down the road?
Yeah, that's one of the first things that happened. Like, even before I picked up a guitar, I found myself writing songs, and I would write songs with my sister. Like, we loved pop and dance music, so we'd find ourselves writing like these poppy kind of tunes. And it's funny because I think I always gravitate, even now as a songwriter, like I gravitate towards the music first. Like, I can almost hear the entire song and the instrumentation and the arrangement in my head. The odd time the lyric will come to me first, but it's usually a mix of both. It kind of feeds into itself. I don't even think I've written a song the same way twice. Like, sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night and the song is freaking written because I had a dream about it, you know. Or like, other times it's a journey that takes, you know, a few years to unfold. Yeah. And then other times you just really have to sit with it. But I'll usually start hearing melodies in my head first, and I'll just start singing along to what I'm working out, and then that, it's almost like it starts to spill out from there if I, right, if I give myself that space of allowing it to be fluid, right? Because I think there's different hats that are worn depending on what you're doing. Like, if I'm writing for another artist, it's coming from, I'm still trying to channel that personal experience so that it could be authentic and relatable. But I'm approaching it a bit differently than if I'm like writing a song for myself, where it's a bit more exploratory because I don't necessarily know where it's coming from.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, and you know, I've taken songwriting workshops and I've read a ton of books, and I think that's what I came to the conclusion after a while, that there is no real definitive way. I mean, there are some songwriters that have a set way that they write, but I find at the end of the day, you know, most people kind of, it happens in a lot of different ways as you described, and it's just interesting to see how that comes along. And you know, as opposed, I think especially if you're open to that too, I think some people maybe just get closed off, or they have a set way that they do things. And but yeah, I think the more you dive in, the more you explore, then the more different opportunities for songs arise. It's interesting, like, I found TikTok, it was not a thing that I thought I'd get into, but I mean, there's so much collaboration going on out there, and I find, yeah, that will happen. I mean, if somebody's looking for somebody to sing with them or play with them, and it's interesting the things that will come out of those sort of quick jams or whatever. Yeah, it's very creative. So,
and that's I think how for me personally, that's what made me a better writer, is collaborating with other people. I think that's such an invaluable experience, and it just it expands what your paradigm, because I think we have this innate sense of what we are used to doing, that of what comes naturally to us. And I think in order to keep things fresh and also to continue growing and refining your craft, like, having that experience of seeing how other people approach writing, mm-hmm, has been one of the greatest teachers for me.
Right now, your heart is sinking in hot water. Yeah, somehow it radiates a light, and this tide that pulls you even closer is the soul ride of an old love at first sight. And I'm gonna feel it, feel it. And I'm gonna feel it, feel it. Right now, your world is screaming torture. Are whispering our names. You are the one we could be too. When worlds collide, we'll push on through. We'll chase the stars and catch the moon. Let go of the shore, it's coming soon. Right now, electric matter comes in waves. And I'm gonna
That was Feel It by Hill and the Sky Heroes.
Well, that's interesting. I was going to ask you about that because as a producer, I mean, you know, I like the producers that kind of work with the artists that way. I can think top of my head, like Glenn Ballard working on the first Alanis Morissette album and working with various people. And it really was him going in and being a collaborator. And I see that with a lot of your stuff. I just interviewed Cassie Da Silva recently. And she had you producing half the CD and Robin producing the other half, but both of you, I think for you collaborating, I'm not sure if Robin was collaborating on songs, but certainly I think, yourself.
Yeah, she had co-written some songs with Cassie as well. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So yeah, I mean, it seems like a very cool relationship because I think sometimes people get confused about, you know, what a producer does, because sometimes a producer is much more hands off. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, in your case, it sounds like you're very hands on.
Yeah. And it's funny because I don't always necessarily produce the songs that I write, and I don't always like write the songs that I produce. Right. So it's, for me, my mentality towards production is that, and you're right, sometimes there is overlap like between the songwriting and production relationship, but I really think that the producer's job is to be able to, listen to what the artist wants. And I think there's many goals that an artist can have, ranging from personal goals to professional goals. And I think all those things need to be known and taken into account so that the producer can then go in and facilitate that experience in order to execute not only the recording, but also make it a safe experience for the artist, you know, if that makes sense, because recording is a very, I mean, we all have our insecurities and stuff. I know even when I go into the studio, like I'm always in my head about certain things. And I find that's my goal, is like trying to create the most holistic environment and trusting environment so that risks can be taken, so that you can kind of push through and create those very authentic things.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, songwriting and performing is such a personal thing. And yeah, I mean, I can see that, with the projects that you've been involved with, Tanya Joy is another one. I know Tanya and we've written some songs together and, we're quite friendly, and you can see it was one of those things with her album coming out, that it was really having the producer that really understood her vision, and was fully on board and was helping her, you know, speak the language that she wanted to speak. And it was beautiful to see that. I mean, you know, and I don't know sometimes if these things would happen with a different producer, or with the wrong person. I know in Cassie's case, she was very committed to having an all female team, both with the videos and with the production side of it. Do you find that you're working with a lot of, female musicians and session players, or is it kind of a mixed team for you?
It's a mix. I do think that a lot of female artists do tend to gravitate. I tend to work more with them. I think that's just because a lot of the artists that I've worked with, actually, but this goes for a lot of the male artists I've worked with too. Like, they do find that working with a female producer is a bit of a different experience, in that they feel... I don't know. I think it's just a change. I think honestly, it's just a change. Like, I know for the women I've worked with, it's because there is a vulnerability that can be shared that, you know, obviously you can relate to on a certain level with similar experiences. I think even within the music industry, we've shared a lot of the same experiences and trials, I guess, coming up. So yeah, but it's not necessarily something that I consciously think about. Like I more so like to just find artists that I believe in, that I relate to. And there has to be a chemistry there. Cause as you said, it's like, you're not going to get the same thing with just any producer artist relationship, right? Like, it's a very unique connection. It's a relationship that is very sacred to me. And I think that even when you're writing songs, right? Like, there's some co-writing sessions that you do where, you can write a song, but there are those special songs that stick out, and it's because of that connection that you had with that collaborator, you know? So the producer artist relationship is very similar to that, where like, if you can trust each other and you're on the same kind of wavelength and you just get each other, and there's an unspoken language there, right? That I think is what I look for in projects. And when that's present, then all the other things are very easy. Like, it just kind of starts to flow. and it's very synchronous.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so of all the hats that you do wear, and you know, is there a specific type of collaborating, like you prefer being a producer, a songwriter, musician? You said songwriting, working in the studio is your favorite thing. So is it within the studio? Is it the overall production, or is it songwriting, or to you, are they just, you can't really separate the two?
I do separate them, because there's some things that I obviously produce that I don't write. I think It's just, for me, it's just about the creative journey and experience, and okay. and whether that's expressed through a song or through actually building something. And sometimes those things are happening simultaneously. But yeah, for me, it's just about that experience of creating something from nothing, you know, and whether that begins with a song or whether that begins with like a scratch track, you know, that you build into a full production. That's what fuels me. It's just that's what I think I've been chasing, and what I constantly chase. It's that feeling of materializing something that was just conceptual, you know, that was abstract.
Nice. And you like to share that with people. I attended your masterclass, which I thought was great. I mean, because there's not a lot of artists that, and producers and people who do those type of things, but it's fantastic. But you could tell that passion, that excitement, and that thoroughness. And it was really wanting to share that, I think, with everybody else. It was fascinating to me that it wasn't really even a thought about, hey, I'm doing this great thing, or I'm giving back. It was just, it seemed more natural and organic with you that that you would kind of share your experiences and your knowledge with people.
Yeah, well, I think I, in a way, it is paying it forward, because I had so many people that have been that for me, you know, that kind of inspired me and opened up my world and all the possibilities. And it's something I'm just passionate about. Like, when I'm passionate about something, I can freaking talk about it for days.
It makes it much easier.
I think anything having to do with the creative process, or even just technical things, because there is that side of me where, yeah, I love the fluidity of creativity, but I also really, really love the technical aspect of what I do. Like, I love gear, and I love knowing why certain things sound and do the things that they do, and how that influences everything else. And so, yeah, I like to understand the tools that I'm using or that are available to me to really maximize on them. So
that's awesome. I think I can't remember what it was. You had just posted something that you had finally gotten a piece of gear for your studio.
In front of me right now.
And you were so excited about it.
Yeah, I know. And it's stuff that obviously people are like, I don't know what that is, but I'm happy for you.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you can never have enough gear. I mean, really.
Yeah. I know. I'm waiting for a piece now. And it's like because I'm a huge fan of the Motown sound, right? And I've kind of recreated aspects of it, I think, in some of the projects I've done, but it's something that I'm like, I haven't quite had the right tools to execute it in that like authentic way. So I'm waiting for this preamp now that is based on the preamps that they used, the tube preamps that they used for all the Motown recordings. And yeah, I'm excited, because I also didn't realize, like, I assumed that they just mic'd their amps, and it's like they were going direct.
Oh yeah.
Right. Straight into the board. Yeah.
I would have assumed
like,
back
that's
then
why
too.
That guitar sound is like so specific, because I've never been able to recreate it. I've always been miking amps, and I'm like, oh, it was a direct signal going through a tube. That's all it was.
That's interesting.
And obviously amazing players.
Yeah. 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 Well, I mean, and you know, along with what the Beatles and the Beach Boys were doing, and Phil Spector, I mean, the other side of it was what was happening in Motown. So much influence on songwriting and sound and recording that we probably, you know, 30, 40, 50 years later, we take for granted, and especially younger people maybe coming up. So it's neat that people are kind of going back and exploring and going, how did they get that sound? It's
And that's the thing. I think like that was a huge part of what inspired me growing up. It's like you hear that recording, right? Where you're kind of like, your jaw falls to the ground. You're like, how did they do that? Like, what is that? And I think that's an interesting part of production for me. And I think what I don't think I consciously knew I wanted to produce, but I, ever since, now looking back in retrospect, it's something that I always kind of was wanting to do. You know, I was always interested when I would listen to a song, like, what's the instrumentation and how are they getting those sounds and what are those effects? And I think from a really young age, I started to pick those things apart. And I've always been interested in, like, reverse engineering sound.
That's amazing. I mean, I think we probably could just talk a whole show on that segment. I mean, I just love hearing what you have to say, but I'm being kind of mindful of the time because I know you have a session that you have to run off to. So mm-hmm. we'll definitely have to catch up with you, I think, in the new year and do some follow-up and talk more specifically about some of the artists and the projects that you've been working on. We're going to feature some of that music in the show, but I wanted to get to the 10 questions, if you're okay with that.
Absolutely.
Because I always like, I find there's some very interesting answers that we get on the show. The 10 questions for anybody who's not familiar with it was developed by a French interviewer, Bernard Pivot, and then made famous by James Lipton on the Actor Studio. So are you ready?
I think so.
All right. Hill, what is your favorite word?
There is a Greek word that I love and it's philotimo. And that's, I think, one of my favorite words. And it's really hard to translate in English because it's essentially a word that encompasses the highest virtues of living in the Greek culture. And it spans back to the ancient times. But it's essentially a series of virtues that relate to kindness and honor and unconditional love and friendship and appreciation essentially for the path that you're forging, but also an appreciation for your ancestors that have come before you. Wow. So it's loaded, but
yeah, that's a deep word. Philotimo, is that
philotimo?
Philotimo. Yeah. Wow. I have to remember that one. Might have to get that stenciled on my wall. Totally. And how about your least favorite word?
Probably phlegm.
Yeah, that's nasty.
It's disgusting. It's pretty gross. Yeah, any gross word like about a bodily function are kind of my not favorite words.
Fair enough. So, you know, I think we know the answer to some of this, but what turns you on creatively, spiritually, emotionally?
I think those kindred relationships, you know, like I love meeting people and talking with people, but every so often you come across that moment and it might be a stranger or it might be someone you've known forever, but those really profound conversations that are had where time just ceases to exist, I think are some of the most powerful moments that exist, you know, and I long for those moments.
Nice. And what turned you off?
Probably dishonesty. I think that's inauthenticity. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's been so much of that, I think, the last couple of years, at least in the social media and the political world. I'm not sure about the real world. I mean, I was watching Dave Chappelle's recent show, and he was talking about a friend of his getting bashed on Twitter, and he said, but it didn't really matter because it's not a real place. But I think we forget that sometimes. Yeah. What is your favorite curse word?
I love to curse, so that's hard. I have like the mouth of a trucker, and I have since I was like 2 years old, but probably fuck.
Nice. Yeah, that seems to be the most popular one by far. I had a new one last week. It was bastard, which was the first time I'd heard that on the show. So what sound or noise do you love?
That's hard. I love a lot of sounds. Probably the sound of a surf guitar is one of my favorite sounds.
Nice. Yeah. Dick Dale and those guys.
Or even just some like good old Nancy Sinatra, like bang, bang, that like dark surf.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino vibes.
Yes. Yes.
Love that sound. That's like the soundtrack of my life, I feel.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah. It was such a unique thing and so powerful. Mm-hmm. What sound or noise do you hate?
Mastication. I hate chewing sounds. I realize this is a thing. It's called misophonia. Someone informed me because I have I've always had like a strong aversion to mouth sounds. And I know it's weird because I listen to people singing on mics and like microscopically all the time.
So you're going to hear all those.
But it's not quite that. It's like usually in the context of me sitting in a restaurant, if I can literally zone in on the person chewing across the room and something festers in me like this anger. I can't explain it, but yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. We have a 12-year-old son and I'm conscious of that, especially now that he's getting into middle school and he's going to be out more socially and maybe having an interest in dating and things like that. I'm going, you know, dude, you got to really and just do everything your dad doesn't do and you should be okay. But what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
This is hard because I, as much as I love what I do, I always dream of what else I can do. Because I don't even think of my job as a job. It's just I just do it. And there's other things that I'd love to just do. Probably, I don't know, I'd love to be a chef. I've like toyed around with the idea of being a botanist because I love plants and I love to like make new plants. I also love archaeology. So I think I would love to be an archaeologist.
Nice.
Uncover some history. Yeah.
Yep. Well, it sounds like you're doing that a little bit anyways with your exploration of the Motown sound. And so it seems like a natural
fit. Yes, it's sonic archaeology.
There you go. Sonic. There's a new term. What profession would you not like to do?
I think just doing the same thing every day is what I'd not like to do. So I don't know whether that's like a desk job, maybe. I can't do those kinds of jobs, I feel like. Oh, well, I could if I had to, but yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of just love that I don't know what I'm going to do every day. It's kind of a mystery. Like, I know the framework, but I don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And that's exciting.
Yeah, I think that's a common thing for musicians. It's just the 9-to-5. Many of them probably have to work various jobs to support their passion, but not a natural thing to want to work those guys. And so many lucky musicians maybe have never had a real job, whatever a real job is. And if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
This is a hard one. I guess I'd like to hear that I lived with purpose, you know? I don't know. I think that's what I want for my life. I want to make sure that I'm living it to the fullest and that, I didn't compromise.
Very good. Well, it sounds like you're heading in the right direction. Just as a fan, and somebody who's aware of you speaking of your body of work and the people that you've worked with and the things that you've contributed, and you're still much, much younger than I am. So I think you're well on your way. So that's fantastic. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure getting to chat with you. I got to meet you virtually the first time. I was Song Studio a couple of years ago the interview there and being a mentor. And you've continued on that path of giving back, which is fantastic. So I look forward to the new projects and I look forward to getting an opportunity to chat with you again, hopefully in the new year. So Hill Kirkutis, thank you very much for joining us on Musicians FAQ this week.
Thanks, Stuart.
I pray it's raining outside, 'cause my tears have long dried, and my love, like the tide, has gone out. Well, there once flowed a river, how I long to forgive her, the silent killer. Locked out. And when there's nothing left to prove, I keep holding back the truth. The damn fool. from the mind. Love like the sweetest wine, hand to mouth. And I have the taste of your love, watershed and damage done. The twisted tongue, the dry. Ooh, ooh, the dry. Ooh, ooh, you leave me for dead in this drought. You leave me for dead. You leave me for dead.
Hi, this is Hill Kirkutis, and you are listening to the Musician's FAQ with Stuart McKee on CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo.
Like a butchered out cow. it clear. Still medicine at the root.